Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. It is time for Open Mic. A little history. Charlie Baker used to join us every Tuesday at this time, 1 o'clock on Open Mic. But now that he's jumped into the governor's race, we decided to turn the mic over to the other gubernatorial candidates. And I think today, as Marjorie said, completes round one. So far, we've spoken to Juliet Kayyem, Martha Coakley, Don Berwick, Joe Avalon. And today we are joined by State Treasurer Steve Grossman. Steve, it's great to see you.
Thank you, Jim. Marjorie, nice to be with you.
And I had to peek behind the microphone to see you over there.
I know, it's a little difficult
Grossman,
here.
But I'll do my best.
Obstructive vision.
Yeah. We were talking before you came in. There's a strike of Boston's school bus drivers today, and we were talking about the animus toward public employee unions. I know that before you were in the government, your family business, Mass Envelope, is a private union there, which is different, obviously, than public employee unions. But why do you think there is this growing animus toward public employee unions? It didn't used to be around 30, 40 years ago. Now it's really, you can almost feel it in the air when these school things like these school bus drivers go on strike. Where does it come from?
I think it may have something to do with a perception of imbalance, that somehow people who aren't part of that world feel like their lives have really deteriorated, that their economic lives have deteriorated, their kids are lugging around a lot of college debt, having a lot of trouble paying their mortgages, and they think maybe there's inequitable treatment in some way, shape, or form, pensions, health benefits, et cetera, and that somehow settlements of negotiations go in a direction that they just wouldn't in the private sector be able to take full advantage of. So I think it's a sense of unfairness, imbalance, something of that
nature. You think it's a legit sense of unfairness and imbalance?
Well, I think you have to separate the facts from the fiction.
Yep.
The fact of the matter is that state employees virtually pay for their own pensions. They pay 9% of their first $30,000. They pay 11% over and above that. If you're a teacher, you pay for 11% out of your salary. That essentially funds your own pension. But when people see all these pension benefits and they think that they're not getting the same thing in the private sector, then there is a deep sense of concern that maybe things are out of whack. So I think when you look at the facts don't bear out the emotional response, but people tend to respond emotionally when the world in which they've lived has changed so dramatically. And they're having a hard time getting their arms around it. I mean, we're not coming out of this recession as quickly as we had hoped. People talk about the stock market having been at near record levels. I don't know many working families around the state, and I visit with them all the time, whose lives are back where they were before this punishing recession happened 5 years ago. So I think that is part of it.
Hey, Steve, before we leave this topic, Steve Grossman, Treasurer of the Commonwealth, can you settle a disagreement that Marjorie and I have been having for ages? What's the average pension of a state public employee? Marjorie, do not mouth anything or hand Steve Grossman a note. What's the average pension?
It's in the mid-20s.
Thank you very much. Okay, so now we have the treasurer and the governor both saying the same thing. Are you accepting of this?
But if we're going to be nitpicking here,
yes.
One thing I think that has been true, though, is that people happily live a long time. So if you work for 20 years for the state, you work for 30 years for the state, you're probably, just do the math, you're not going to be funding 40 or 50 years after that. You know, I think that's one of the difficulties, is it not? We used to all be dead at 60. Thank God that's not true anymore, Steve Grossman.
Thank God. Thank God. I mean, yeah.
As he looks around the room, right, good.
Just on the one issue of pensions.
Yep.
I oversee the state's pension system.
Yep.
I oversee the state board of retirement. The state pension system is tens of billions of dollars unfunded. That's a serious problem. Fortunately, the investor community looks at us positively, and we've had the highest bond rating in the history of the Commonwealth. But the reality is that we've got to do a lot of things over the next few years, between now and 2040, when legally we have to fully fund those pensions. The line item in the state budget has to keep going up, and the legislature can't play fast and loose with that number. They have to increase it every year, and they can't do what they've done in past years. We've got to earn 8% a year in our investments. And we have to implement pension reform. Good news is pension reform was passed a few years ago. It's going to save $5 billion, $3 billion at the state level, $2 billion at the municipal level. Those three things, increasing the line item, the pension in the budget, the $5 billion pension reform, and increasing our investment return, which we've done pretty well over the past few years, that itself will get our pensions fully funded by 2040. That's a good thing. That's the plan we're on.
Hey, Steve Grossman, before we get to your candidacy to be the next governor of Massachusetts, in your former life, you were the chair of the Democratic National Committee under Bill Clinton. What do you make of the Democratic strategy on the shutdown? We're day eight of the shutdown. We're 9 days away from what could be the first default in the history of the United States of America. Barack Obama and the Democrats have said no negotiations. You want to talk about health care? You want to talk about Medicare and Medicaid? We'll do all those things, just not as part of this. No negotiations, no compromise, clean bills. Where are you on that?
Well, let's go back to where we started. A president proposed health care reform that would give every American health care and would give those with pre-existing conditions coverage. That bill was ultimately supported by Congress, both the House and the Senate, went to the president's desk, became law. Then it went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court validated it, at least in a significant way. And then it went to the American people in the 2012 election, and Barack Obama was reelected by a pretty strong margin. Healthcare was a big piece of that vote. So when a significant change in public policy, healthcare reform, has been validated by all three branches of government, the president, the legislature or the Congress, and the Supreme Court, and the American people have said, we're okay with it, even though there are some problems with it. Yes, some changes may be appropriate. And I can think of some changes I'd make if you and I were negotiating right here. The whole business of small businesses, which the governor has gone back and we haven't had our form, Massachusetts form, of small business benefits included in the bill. This whole business about rating factors, which gets a little complicated. But essentially, we thought when we put a plan in place a couple of years ago that we would be able to lower the cost of health insurance for small businesses by 10 to 15%. That's a big deal. That hasn't happened. So I'd like to see that changed. But fundamentally, when the president said this is an article of faith, it's been validated over the last few years, and I can't negotiate away something that is so important to all Americans that Ted Kennedy worked on back in the 60s.
Yeah, but let's just take away from the Republican demand, Steve Grossman, at least as I understand, there are a number of them, is no longer repeal. It's either delay or one of the demands on the table, at least as of a couple of days ago, was the repeal. Just take one example, the medical device tax. Virtually every Democrat in Massachusetts hates the medical device tax. Ed Markey said it should be repealed. Elizabeth Warren said it should be repealed. With some, they want the money replaced, et cetera. So why isn't the president able to say, listen, this is the one area I'm willing to give, but if I give on this, because even my fellow Democrats think it was a bad idea, if I give, I need to know the shutdown's over and the debt ceiling is raised. Why this immutable principle that I can't negotiate? When he negotiated 2 years ago on the debt ceiling, that led to what, $1 trillion plus in deficit reduction.
So sit down and negotiate some changes in the legislation.
As part of
Let me finish.
Yeah.
Sit down and negotiate some changes that make good common sense, but don't do it with a gun at the head of the president and of the country. That is not fair. That's not appropriate. You know, I oversee the state's cash. We're in decent shape because we just borrowed $800 million, so we're not going to run out of cash anytime soon. But it's having a devastating effect and will continue to have a devastating effect. If we get beyond October 17th, then it's really going to start to hurt. That's going to hurt the country, our economy, our exports. It's freezing business people. They're not hiring. So don't negotiate with a gun at your head, but let's negotiate common sense things like the medical device tax, which I agree should be repealed.
We're talking with Steve Grossman, who is running for the Democratic nomination for governor. Of course, he is the state treasurer. But if we do get close to that October 17th and we're facing real scary economic stuff, should Obama be more conciliatory than he's been to date?
I think the president always has been a person who's willing to reach out his hand and negotiate. But you've got a relatively small number of people in the Republican coalition who are holding hostage the possibility of getting beyond the shutdown and getting back to the people's business. I mean, I read an editorial just today about how John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, has allowed a relatively small group of people in his coalition to hold that hostage. If you put a vote to get back to business up to a majority of the Congress, Democrats and Republicans, without that Tea Party impact, and I'm not going to throw bombs here, I'm simply going to say it is having an impact, then you'd have a majority of the Congress saying, let's get back to business. So I believe fundamentally that the president needs to hold firm here because the people's interest is – this is one of the few times when the people's interest trumps negotiating in a way that will throw Affordable Care Act over the side of the ship, which is what they really want.
Okay, let's come back to Massachusetts and your race for governor. Mm-hmm. Is it fair to say the most recent poll, you're getting crushed by Coakley, and the most recent fundraising, you're crushing Coakley. So we don't have to go into all those details. It's early in the race. However, when you look at where you are on the issues, a liberal-leaning Democrat, and my words, not yours, and Martha Coakley, a liberal-leaning Democrat, is the primary difference between the two of you on what experience you bring to the table? You're primarily a private sector guy with some public service. She's primarily a public sector. Is that the primary difference that should cause people to pick her or you or one of the other people in this race?
Well, I think it's experience and what that experience means in terms of what I'm prepared to focus on.
Like what?
When I become governor.
Like what?
Well, like the economy, like jobs, and like the connection between jobs, the economy, and public education at all levels. I mean, remember, I've spent 35 years of my life running a successful business, growing jobs, creating jobs in the private sector. Took that experience into the treasurer's office, made some commitments to the people of Massachusetts. Said we put the checkbook online, we did it. Said that we put every contract out to bid that I was responsible for, we did it, saving tens of millions of dollars. Brought money back from Europe, Australia, and Asia, the people's money, your money and my money, and put it into small local community banks right here in Massachusetts. Fundamental principle, Massachusetts taxpayers' money, Massachusetts banks, loan to creditworthy Massachusetts companies to create jobs right here. And it's created hundreds of millions of dollars of loans. So my experience is in small business growth and economic development, job creation, and I'm going to continue to work because I do believe the people of this Commonwealth want a governor with proven leadership who's going to leave no one behind. Leaving no one behind, particularly around economic issues, jobs, our economic future, and the kind of public education we need in order to guarantee the workforce of the 21st century. That, to me, is what I'm going to focus on every step of the way in this campaign.
What kind of public education do we need to get ready for the rest of the century?
Well, I can think of a whole series of things. First of all, the governor's right, and I agree with him. We need to clear the waiting list and get the 30,000 kids who are on waiting lists for pre-K off those waiting lists and into programs because, frankly, if those kids aren't reading by the end of the third grade and they fall behind, that's not okay.
Where's the money from? Essentially, his billion-dollar request in new taxes for early education and related topics was almost zeroed out. A little bit of money, $500 million-plus for transportation, not very much for early education. Where do you find the money, Steve Grossman?
Well, first of all, you find the money from new sources of revenue, one of the most important ones that I've been talking about. It was actually passed by the United States Senate, bipartisan majority, almost 20 Republican senators, and that's internet sales taxes. This is a matter of Main Street fairness, by the way. We have 500,000 jobs in this Commonwealth, come from the retail sector. It's $250 million of additional revenue. I would use that money both for transportation and education. Second of all, we've got to incorporate extended learning time in the lives of our children, particularly in high poverty parts of the state. It may be that certain high income communities don't need extended learning time, but we need to incorporate it. The governor's done a little bit of it, but very little of it, and we need to do a lot more of it. Extended learning time, bringing better technology. I've said that I want to make every public school in Massachusetts digital learning ready by 2016. What does that mean? It means we put a tablet, an iPad, in the hands of every high school student, then middle school students, then elementary school students. We use technology with great teachers properly trained in an extended learning time so we bring more music, more dance, more theater, more sports into the lives of children in an extended learning day. They need it desperately.
In Boston, you know that the mayor, Menino, tried to get the extended learning day last year. He didn't get very far. They still have one of the shortest school days in the whole country. So how do you succeed where he failed?
Well, if you talk to Chris Gabrielli, who I spent 2 hours with last week, who's probably more knowledgeable about after-school education and extended learning time than anybody I know. We all know Chris from not only his political campaigns, but his sort of brilliant articulation of bold, energetic reforms.
What's he run? It's called Mass 2020, Massachusetts
right.
2020.
Right.
Yeah, if you want to look it up, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And it's a very, very fine program. I think we have to sit down together, the business community, parents, educators, political leaders, and say, what do we need to incorporate into public education at every level? I mean, we need to make our vocational technical schools far more appropriate. If we're going to create 50,000 new manufacturing jobs in Massachusetts, which I think we can do, then the business community, the vocational technical schools, and the community colleges have to work together. We've got to take that graduation rate in our community colleges, which is now hovering at 17% to 18%, embarrassingly low, and bump it up to the national average of 24%. These things would all matter. Some of them have a price tag. Some of them actually don't have a significant price tag. Fundamentally, I believe we need to grow our way out of this situation we're in and this recession, create more jobs, create more economic growth, create more economic opportunity. And I think I've proven through the Small Business Banking Partnership and through the number of jobs that have been created just in the last 2 years in terms of small business lending, that small businesses are the backbone of our economy, but it's got to be widely shared because there are too many gateway communities, too many parts of this Commonwealth that are in that other community, that other Commonwealth. The Commonwealth has been left out, left behind, left to fend for itself. So it is ultimately about jobs, creative approaches to job creation. I've done it with my life professionally. I've done it as treasurer. And I'll do it as governor.
So I'm listening to you, and this all sounds terrific. But you know, you ran for governor back in 2002, mm-hmm. and you dropped out midway through the season before we got to the final election. How do you get your message out in 2013 so that you can get to put your programs into place? How are you going to turn this around? Jim mentioned, you know, that it's early, but the poll numbers aren't looking fantastic. How do you change things?
Well, again, I ran for in 2002. You know, it's interesting. Somebody asked me the other day, what did you learn from your race in 2002. Yep. I said, I learned how to be a better listener. And in listening to the needs of the people of this Commonwealth, listening to citizens and educators and business people and innovators and people who start new companies, I think I have my finger on the pulse of what they need. Combine that with 35 years of leadership, running a business, bringing progressive values into that business. You know, one of the things that I care deeply about, and it's not being talked about much, but I think it's important, it's a quality of life issue, is that 975,000 people woke up this morning and did not have a single hour of earned sick time. That means when they're sick, they go to work sick because they're afraid of getting fired. It means they send their kids to school sick with 102 temperature because they don't know how to get to work and they're afraid of losing their jobs. This is an article of faith for me. We've had it in our company for 25 years. I was the first business owner to testify in 2006 in the legislature, in the Gardner Auditorium. We waited 8 years. This is morally wrong that we don't have it, and it's economically unwise. These are some of the things that I will talk about throughout this campaign. And I think the platform that I have of successful business owner with progressive values, who became state treasurer, who made commitments, and who has kept virtually every one of the commitments that he made to the people of this Commonwealth, and now wants to take that into the corner office because the governor has a really big toolbox with a lot of really big power tools, and on economic growth, job creation, there are resources there. That's why I'm running for governor.
Can we go from this very high road we've been on to a much lower road where I'm much
Certainly.
More good? Have you seen any of those new $100 bills that came out today?
No, I just saw that we're doing it. I haven't seen one
You don't
yet.
Have them like in your drawers
Let me
or
look.
Whatever? Okay,
Let me
fine.
Look.
But staying on the political...
No, I only have a 220s, a 10,
can I borrow
a 5,
20
and 2
on this,
That's all
One
I
last
got.
Thing for me. The politics of this race... Doug Rubin's a pretty high-profile political strategist. He did Deval Patrick's for, well, both campaigns, Elizabeth Warren, Joe Kennedy. Used to work. He did your treasurer thing,
mm-hmm.
did he not?
Right.
He decided in this race, apparently, not to do your campaign and has moved over to Martha Coakley's. What's the backstory here, Steve Grossman?
No real backstory. He did our campaign. I have a good relationship with Doug. He decided to go in a different direction.
Did you want him in this campaign?
We had conversations. Didn't work out. But I've got a terrific team, and that's the most important thing for me. I've got a wonderful team of people, some people you know well, John mm-hmm. Martilla, whom you've known for many, many years.
In the spirit of full disclosure, he used to work for me many years ago when I was doing ballot campaigns. Yes, I know him
and
well.
And John Martilla
Very
still has
guy.
His finger on the pulse, still
he
played
does.
An important role for Ed Markey in his race, successful race to the Senate. People like Dennis Cannon, who ran Paul Tsongas' office, was his chief of staff in the United States Senate. So we've got Michael Hooley, whom you've known for many years, and there is not a better political operative, political player, political strategist in America than Michael Hooley, and he's been sought after by many people, Hillary Clinton, Al Gore, et cetera. Some races won, some races lost, but he was intimately involved in the previous races. So we've got a lot of good ideas. I think the fundamental issue here is not who the advisors are. I think the fundamental issue is who is going to become the governor, who's going to work every single day on the economic challenges, job creation, innovation, public education at every level, who's going to link those up in a way that gives the business people of this Commonwealth, rank-and-file citizens, workers of this Commonwealth, a sense that they're not being left out, left behind, left to fend for themselves. And I hope that my progressive values, that I've demonstrated throughout my life in business and as state treasurer, coupled with some really bold, exciting, transformational ideas for the people of this Commonwealth, will give me an opportunity when I'm governor to implement those ideas and keep this state on a track and propel it forward in a way that it deserves.
Last two political questions. As I said, you served as the chair of the Democratic National Committee under Bill Clinton. Is he going to endorse you in this race?
He helped me when I ran for governor in 2002.
Have you asked him yet for his endorsement?
We haven't spoken yet. It's early.
And is Hillary Clinton, in your estimation, either based on your knowledge, which I assume you have, or based on educated, informed speculation, is she running for the presidency the next round?
You know, she hasn't discussed it with me. I saw Hillary when she was in Boston a couple of months ago. I hope she runs for president. If she runs for president, I'll support her. I think she did an extraordinary job as Secretary of State. I think she demonstrated phenomenal leadership. And that's the kind of leadership this country needs. And so I would support Hillary Clinton if she ran for president. And in terms of Bill Clinton, at some point he and I will have a conversation. It's early, Jim. You know, you mentioned earlier the polls. Seems to me I recall a guy named Deval Patrick, who 49 weeks before the primary was way behind, and people pretty
what
much wrote
to him
off. I think he won by a pretty wide margin.
Oh, that Deval Patrick, I'm sorry.
Later. I think that's the same guy.
Hey, so Steve Grossman.
I'll be happy to take those odds and continue to be out there. The most important issue in this campaign, the most important thing I can do right now is organize, inspire and bring those grassroots activists to the table, to the campaign, and give them a sense that the future of this Commonwealth under my leadership can be bright indeed.
Steve, it's great to see you. Treasurer Steve Grossman, we hope we'll see you a lot in the next number
of
months.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank
you, Marjorie.
Thank you very much for being with us. State Treasurer Steve Grossman is, of course, running for governor. Next Tuesday, we're going to be joined by our new open mic guest, Nancy Cann, historian based at the Harvard Business School. When we come back, we're going to look at the NFL's checkered response to football's concussion crisis by way of the new Frontline documentary airing tonight, League of Denial. The conversation is next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.